It is so good to see all of you that are here this evening. If you were to walk into my office and just look around, there are certain things you can deduce about me. One, I'm from Mississippi. Two, I'm an Ole Miss fan. And if you look around very much, you'll figure out I like politics. My father was involved in politics when I was growing up. He used to run people's campaigns for them in Mississippi. And so from my youth, I was raised in politics. And it was something we always talked about intensely at the dinner table often. And so as you can imagine, as a grown man, I am very interested in politics. What we're going to be talking about in our sermon here this evening is not Democrat and Republican. We're going to be talking about government, period, whether it's Democrat or Republican or some other form of government, and the Christian's relationship that we are supposed to be having with that government. One of the best texts that we're going to be opening with to help us come to understand this is found in the book of Romans. In Romans chapter 13, we're going to read verse 1 through 5. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except from God. And the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Now, let's just stop right there. Right off the bat, we'll learn an extremely important thing about government. Government is appointed by God. It is not a situation that exists just because of societal evolution. It is actually appointed by God, set up by God for a purpose. When you go to verse 2, it says, therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God. And those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. Continuing in verse 3, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. Now notice, if you will, here in verse 4, when he talks about how the government does not bear the sword in vain. What you do with the sword is kill somebody or punish somebody with it. One of the primary functions of government is the punishment of criminals, to take them and try them, and if they are found guilty, then to punish them. As a matter of fact, it's not on the sermon outline, but I'll quote it to you if you don't mind, from Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 11. It says, when sentenced against an evildoer is not carried out speedily, the hearts of the sons of men will be set in them to do evil. Now, whether you realize it or not, capital punishment was found and commanded under the Patriarch dispensation, under the Mosaic dispensation, and under the Christian dispensation under which we live today. And so one of the primary functions of government is to protect us as citizens of the nation where we live from those who are of the criminal element who will commit crimes and hurt us. It is the government's job to take those individuals, try them, and punish them. And notice how he says that he is a minister, he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath. In the Old Testament, the avenger was the executioner, if you do not know that term. Whenever someone was found guilty, they were taken to the avenger, and the avenger was the individual who was the executioner of those who were to be put to death. And so one of the primary functions of government in our lives is to protect us from those who are criminals, so we can hopefully lead a quiet and peaceable life. Now that we understand why God has set up government and its primary function, let's go and see what the scriptures say about us and our relationship with the government under which we live. In 1 Peter chapter 2, now verses 13 through 17, he says, therefore submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme, or to governors, as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. So here again, we see in verse 14, he talks about the governors, how they're sent to be punishers of those who are evildoers. But back in verse 13, he gives a responsibility to us, and that is we submit ourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. In every country, you're going to have federal laws, and then In our country, we have state laws, and then you have county laws, and then you have city laws. We're supposed to obey all of them. And one of the things I want you to notice is he does not say, obey those that you agree with. Unfortunately, sometimes I see people having that idea of what they think the way it's supposed to be is, I obey the laws as long as I agree with them, as long as I like them. But if I don't like them and I think they're not fair, then I'm not going to obey them. That's not what he says. He says, you submit yourself, notice this, to every ordinance, whether you like it or don't like it, agree with it or disagree with it. Now, notice, if you will, in the close of verse 17, where he says something very interesting here, and that is, honor the king. Honor is showing respect to someone and honor to someone that is due them. You need to understand, at this time in history, Nero was the emperor. And eventually it was Nero who crucified Peter upside down and had Paul the apostle beheaded. And so you're dealing here with one, historically speaking, one of the most wicked men who ever lived in history. And yet God says, honor the king. You need to understand that honoring someone who is in positions in government has got nothing to do with whether or not you agree with them. It has got nothing to do with whether or not you approve of their decisions. It has to do with the position they hold, period. Now, bringing that home to us, we don't have an emperor. We have presidents. And we have political parties. Now, I've learned years ago, there's two things you don't talk about. You know, the first one that says religion. What's the second one? Politics. Why is that? Because there's going to be disagreement whenever you talk about it. And it can become very heated disagreement. But one of the things I want you to realize is whether you're Republican or Democrat or some other party, when he talks about honoring those who are in the positions of authority in the government, it's got nothing to do with whether you agree with their position. It's got nothing to do with whether they're Republican, Democrat, or pick anything else. It has to do with the position they hold in government, period. So you honor the king, you honor the governor, you honor your senator, you honor your representative, you honor the policeman. Anybody who's working in government, you give them the honor that is due them, period, end of subject. Whether you agree with them politically or not, it's got anything to do with the matter. I guarantee you, Peter didn't agree with Nero. Paul didn't agree with Nero. Nobody agreed with Nero. But you still honor the king. Titus chapter 3, verses 1 through 2. Again, I'm just going to go to the first part of this. Remind them to be subject to the rulers and authorities, to obey. Obey the laws of the land. The laws there are usually there for a reason. And whether you understand the reasoning or not, just obey the laws. Now then, is there a time when you don't obey the laws? We'll be talking about that now in Acts chapter 5. I'm reading from the outline now. And when they had brought them, they set them before the council. And the high priest asked them, saying, did we not strictly command you not to teach in this name? Now, you've got to understand, we're dealing here with the apostles standing before the Sanhedrin court. Now, if you were going to give you a modern-day equivalent of the Sanhedrin court in our world, we would call it the Supreme Court. This is the highest court in the land. And so the Sanhedrin court is telling them, notice this, did we not strictly command you not to teach in this name? That's what the government told the apostles to do. When you go back to the text, continuing reading here, it says, and look, you have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood on us. But Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. Now then, we've showed you from the scriptures that we're supposed to obey the laws of the land, every one of them, except, and here's the except when the law of the land is telling you to do something that's sinful against the will of God. What if the law of the land said, you have to have weddings for homosexuals in the building here. Now, you may be thinking, well, that day would never come. That would never happen. Well, let me ask you, can a homosexual tell a baker you got to bake a cake for me? Yeah, that's happening right now. And there are people that are bakers are saying, no, we're not going to participate in your wedding because we believe it's sin and we're not going to have anything to do with it. And the government says, you do this or we're going to punish you. What do you do? You obey God rather than man, and you take whatever punishment they give you. Now, you may be thinking, well, that kind of stuff's never going to happen to us here in America. It's happening in America right now, folks. You've got to understand, there are reasons that there are certain businesses that refuse to have anything to do with Obamacare because they're not going to pay for abortions. They don't want to touch it. They don't want to have anything to do with it, and they will shut their doors before they support them. I like Hobby Lobby. If you haven't been keeping up with that, Hobby Lobby took them to the Supreme Court, and they said, we're not going to support it. And we will shut our doors before we pay a dime to kill a human being. I'll do business with them till I'm dead. You do not obey the government, ever. When the government says, sin, or we're going to punish you. Participate in sin, or we're going to punish you. Stop speaking the truth, or we're going to punish you. You need to realize, if the people who are doing what they're doing now continue down the same path, there will come a time when they're going to tell us what we must speak from the pulpit. And if you don't think that's happening, look what's happening in Canada today. If you speak out against homosexuality, they will punish you. So if it's happening above the border, you need to realize they have the same agenda below the border. So you need to realize this is a sermon that hits us now and may unfortunately hit us even more so in the future. When you're going to have to be willing to stand up and say, this is the truth, I don't care what you do to me. And we're not going to participate in sin, period. We're not going to compromise, period. So whenever the government tells you to do something, as the text says here, they strictly commanded them. That's the government, highest authority in the government to the Jews. The answer is we ought to obey God rather than men. Now let's go to another uncomfortable subject, taxes. In Matthew chapter 22, I'm reading from the outline. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Now, again, you got to understand that why you even ask the question, is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar here in the context? Because Caesar's doing a lot of wicked things. And Caesar's a wicked person. And we're supporting the Roman Empire if we give them taxes. Are we supporting all the wickedness that the government does? You see how you get that conclusion? So the question is asked is actually a reasonable question. Verse 18, but Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, why do you test me, you hypocrites? Show me the tax money. So they brought him a denarius, and he said to them, whose image and inscription is this? And they said to him, Caesar's. He said to them, render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. This is a very important teaching, brethren. Even if you disagree with what the government does with the money, we are still supposed to render to the government what is due the government. This is taught again over in the book of Romans in chapter 13, verses 6 through 7. For because of this, you also pay taxes. Notice, pay taxes means pay your taxes. For they are God's ministers, attending continually to this very thing. Remember, we talked about earlier the purpose of the government, and primarily it is to protect us from criminals. We have men who are policemen. You know their primary function? To protect us from criminals. You pay your taxes so the people who are setting up to protect us from criminals can survive and do the job they're being given to do. And so he says here, the reason you pay your taxes is because they are God's ministers. These are individuals that have been appointed by God as far as the government, and their reasoning, again, is to protect us. And then in verse 7, render therefore to all their due taxes to whom taxes are due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. We've already talked about honoring the king, honoring the governor, honoring the president, honoring the senator, honoring the policeman. All the way down the line, anyone in any form of government, treat them and give them the honor due them as a person who works in the government. But I want to talk about paying taxes. You know, I moved here from Texas. And if you don't know this, people from Texas will really quickly tell you, Texas can leave the union anytime we want. It was a matter of fact, I've had some of the brethren down there in Texas say, a matter of fact, I believe that the Republic of Texas is still in existence. No, it's not. Sorry. And I've come across people down in Texas that say, I'm a citizen of the Republic of Texas, and I refuse to support the invaders. I'm serious. And so they come up with this reason not to pay their taxes. And I'm talking about some of them are highly educated dentists. I knew a dentist that did not want to be paid in cash because he didn't want the government to know what he was being given because he was not going to pay his taxes. I'm not talking about one or two people, folks. I'm talking about a large movement in Texas. Whenever I come across these people, I invariably have to read this verse to them. Last time I checked, Texas is part of the United States. And Texas is you've got to pay taxes in the federal government. You've got to pay taxes to the state. You've got to pay taxes to the county. You've got to pay taxes to the city. And if you don't know this, whenever you get out of college, you pay taxes to everybody. And it's the new year. I don't know about you. You know what I was doing this past week? I was getting ready to pay my taxes and trying to see where I am and trying to see what I need to give Jay and trying to figure out what we got to do to take care of the federal taxes and the state taxes. Okay. That's part of life. Do you like giving the government large chunks of your income? No. We really rather not give them small chunks of our income. But God says you give taxes to whom taxes are due. Whether you like it or not, do it. That's what God says do in the Christian's relationship to the government under which we live. Pay our taxes. Don't hide them. Don't cheat. Don't lie. Don't try to act like I'm going to hide from the government and not give anything to them. That's sin. It's lying, it's cheating, it's sin. Obey the laws of the land, pay your taxes. Now then, 1 Timothy 2, 1 through 2. Therefore I exhort first of all that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings, for all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. The reason, as you can imagine, this sermon was on my mind this week is because on the 20th, we're going to have a new president inaugurated. We're going in a time of transition in government. I have a request I want to make of you, my brethren. Pray for our new president. Pray for our new vice president. Pray for the Senate. Pray for the House of Representatives. Am I dead? My coach is pointing to my microphone, so I don't know what's going on. But anyhow, whether you agree with him or not, whether you voted for him or not, whether you vote or not, pray for those who are in authority. And the reason we're praying for those in authority, and I want you to notice, he does say, pray for those in authority that your business may do good. Pray for those in authority that you may become wealthy. No, that's not what you're praying for. You're praying for those that are in authority that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. Whenever I lived in Czechoslovakia, I learned to hate communism. If you've never been around it or ever been in an environment or a country where communism exists, I will tell you this quickly. It is the most wicked, anti-God, anti-human philosophy that has ever been propagated upon this planet. All it does is totally squash humanity down. And going to a country where I saw what communism was and what it did caused me to hate it with a passion. So anytime someone comes along and starts talking about how communism's good, socialism's good, you haven't got a clue. You're talking foolish and you don't know what you're talking about. Communism is not good. Socialism is not good. If they ever got in control, you and I would not be allowed to worship anymore without being killed. You've got to understand, these people, if they ever got in control, would try to punish us and persecute us. Under their rule, Christianity was outlawed. You do not want these people in our world and in control of our country. Don't play footsie with communism. Socialism is its first cousin. And the only difference is one's got a gun and the other doesn't. If you don't know what I'm talking about, the communists get a gun and they get everybody else's gun, and then they point the gun at you and they say, "Now you do what we say do or we're going to kill you." You need to understand our past history and who these people are. And when people tell you they're a socialist, they are the first cousin of a communist. There, I said it. What I want for my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren is the blessing I've known. I can stand before you and say what I just said. And I'm not going to go to prison for it. And I'm not going to be punished for it. I can preach the sermon like I'm preaching tonight and not go to jail for it. We live in a country where freedom of religion is just something that we just absolutely take for granted. You do not realize how wonderful freedom is until it's taken away from you. So I want to deal with, it's a question, I've heard this one often in my life, is it scriptural for a Christian to serve in government? You need to realize there are books that have been written on this. David Lipscomb, for instance, believed that a Christian should not serve in government. He wrote an entire book on it, The Christian and Civil Government. There have been debates on it numerous times throughout the history of Christianity in the modern church. And so I want to see what the Bible says about the subject. Is it scriptural and is it right for a Christian to serve in government? We're going to start over in Acts chapter 8 and verse 27. And he arose and went, and behold, a man of Ethiopia, a eunuch of great authority under Candace, the queen of the Ethiopians, who had charge of all her treasury and had come to Jerusalem to worship. All right, this is the man we often call the Ethiopian eunuch. I want you to notice what the Ethiopian eunuch did for a living. The Ethiopian eunuch, the text says, he had great authority, that he was the treasurer for the queen. That's the treasurer for the country, basically. You know, secretary of treasurer? Folks, this is high office in government. There is no indication that after he obeyed the gospel, when he went back to Ethiopia, he said, "I got to quit." Right off the bat, there's the answer. The Ethiopian eunuch was a treasurer. And nowhere was he told, "You got to quit being treasurer to be a Christian." And when you go over to Romans chapter 16, verse 23, there's another treasurer of the city, Erastus. Erastus was the treasurer of the city, probably of Corinth. Matter of fact, they have found a stone on which his name is carved, pointing out that he was indeed the treasurer of the city. One of the archaeological finds about Corinth. But again, all I want you to realize is that he was a member of the church in Corinth and that he was the treasurer, and there's no indication that he stopped being the treasurer for the city just because he was a Christian. And then one of the more noted individuals that was in government was a man named Cornelius. From Acts chapter 10, verse 1, then there was a certain man in Caesarea called Cornelius, a centurion, who was called the Italian regiment. Okay, a centurion, if you don't know, is a soldier. And it's not just any soldier, he's a soldier who is over 100 soldiers, a very important man in Roman military government. There's no indication that Cornelius stopped being a centurion after he obeyed the gospel. And then when you go over to Luke chapter 3, it says, then we're talking about John the Baptist here in the context. Then tax collectors also came to be baptized and said to him, Teacher, what shall we do? And he said to them, Collect no more than what is appointed for you. I just want to stop right there. Tax collectors work for the government. And whenever they were asking John the Baptist, what do we need to do? John the Baptist did not tell them, stop being tax collectors. He just told them to be honest. Now in verse 14, likewise, soldiers also, also asked him, saying, And what shall we do? All right, soldiers working for the government. They're asking, what shall we do? John the Baptist, whenever he's giving them guidance on repentance, does not tell them, stop being soldiers. He said to them, do not intimidate anyone or accuse falsely, and be content with your wages. You need to understand this in a greater degree. Soldiers were the policemen a lot of times of ancient worlds. Whenever there's a big uproar, the person who would come in, they didn't call in the city police. They called in the soldiers. And the soldiers were the ones who would put down the uprisings in the cities. And so all I'm wanting you to realize, tax collectors work for the government. Soldiers work for the government. And whenever they're asking what to do is pertaining to repentance, neither one of them are told, quit your job. And then when you go to Acts 13, 7, who was with the proconsul Sergius Paulus? Sergius Paulus, this is on the island of Cyprus, was the proconsul of the island. Again, this is high official on the island. And it says over in verse 12, then the proconsul believed when he saw what had been done, being astonished at the teachings of the Lord. And so Sergius Paulus, by the way, they have found archaeological stones with Sergius Paulus on it, that he was indeed the proconsul of the island of Cyprus. But whenever he obeyed the gospel, he did not stop being the proconsul. All I'm doing is showing you example after example after example of Christians who served in the government. And so I believe the conclusion is a Christian can serve in the government. If you want to run for office, go for it. If you want to be mayor, go ahead. If you want to try to be a governor, go ahead. If you want to try to be president, good luck. But Christians can serve in the government. The scriptures show example after example after example of people who were actually Christians, who whenever they became Christians, there's no indication that they stopped being soldiers or treasurers or proconsuls, whatever position it was that they held, they continued on in them. And so what is the Christian's relationship with the government? First, recognize where government comes from. It has been appointed by God. That is one of the great pieces that gives me comfort here. I talked with y'all about this during the election when everybody was all up in arms and concerned about who was going to win. I told you this. Yes, I'm an American, but I'm not an American first. I'm a citizen of another government first. And my king is righteous. My king is Jesus Christ. He's the monarch of the government that I'm a citizen of. And my king reigns over this country. My king is the one who appoints those who are going to be governmental positions in the country. And so even though I may not like the Senate or the Democrats or the Republicans, whoever it may be in authority, even though you may disagree with people in that regard, you need to realize our king is righteous. And he reigns over all. He's King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But understand this, government exists because it's been appointed by God primarily for the protection of the citizens, to protect us from those who are criminals, from those who would do us harm, from steal from us and harm us. Their job is to protect us from those that are the criminal element in society. Whenever we're getting down to the laws of the land, obey the laws of the land, all of them, except when the laws of the land are trying to get you to sin, in which case you obey God rather than man. And whether you like taxes or not, pay them. Pay the federal taxes, pay the state taxes, pay the county taxes, even pay the city taxes. Pay all your taxes.
because the Lord commands us to do so. And then pray for those who are in authority. I want my grandchildren to have the peace that I've known in my life. I want them to grow up with the security I had in my life of knowing freedom of religion without fear of persecution. Do not take this for granted. Our country does not stand because of our economy. Our country does not stand because of our military. Our country stands because of our God, who allows us to stand as a government. If you go and you study the Bible, you will find that it is God who has the control over the governments to allow them to stand or to allow them to be torn down. I want freedom to stand for future generations. If you desire this, I request your prayers then for those who are going to be in authority this coming week. I appreciate your kind attention. If there's anybody here this evening, though, who's not a member of the one body, if you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, you're willing to openly confess your faith, and motivated by your faith, make the commitment of repentance, we'd be glad to assist you and baptize you into the one body for the remission of your sins. If you're a child of God and there's sin between you and your God that needs to be dealt with, we want to encourage you to deal with it, to take it to your God, to pray for forgiveness. We, as your brothers and sisters, will do the best we can to try to encourage you. If you are subject to the gospel call in any way, let us know while we stand and sing the song which has been selected.